So I always try to make sure that when I throw something new into my world, like, you know, dragons or the, or people have the ability to make animate stone golems, I always, my first thought is, how would this affect society? What would this change? How would a human society adapt to having this ability?
Welcome to Worldcasting, where we discuss real, made-up things. I'm your host, Tyler, and today I'll be sitting down to have a short discussion with Hex, known in the wider world as B.H. Pierce, about his life and works. Happy to have you on, Hex. Would you mind giving a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure, no problem. My author name is B.H. Pierce. I'm a lifelong fan of history and a compulsive world builder. I've been writing seriously since 2014, and I have a sword and sandal novella trilogy out called The Atelvid Chronicles. I also have a full-length novel, The Rosine Rising, out that's kind of political gunpowder fantasy. I've also been doing the Northeast Con Circuit for a few years, running world-building and writing panels.
Sounds like you've been pretty busy for the past few years. Do you have anything coming up on the docket that listeners would be interested in?
Yes and no. I'm not really going to be releasing anything until 2021. There was a project that I was going to have out by this summer, but the recent excitement kind of wound up slowing that down because I can't get access to resources now that all the libraries are closed.
It is putting a damper on many people's plans, I can tell.
All hail all the flood of quarantine novels that's going to come out in 2022.
Oh, it's going to be awful. I'm excited for the movies, which are probably going to be terrible, except for the comedies, which are going to be exceptionally terrible.
Quarantine romance is going to be a new genre, I bet.
Oh my God, I hope not. All right. So you've come out with 3 books, if I recall correctly. When you were writing those books, did you take a, I guess, what was kind of your process for coming up with the world for them? Did you do it as you went along, or did you kind of sit down and make them beforehand?
I'm a compulsive world builder, as I mentioned beforehand. So before I really had any like deeper idea of what the story was going to be, I had plotted out so much of the world and the history. So my first series that I wrote in, it's the first series that I wrote, the Atelva Chronicles. It's the first book is basically about a princess falls overboard, and she's rescued by what are essentially Polynesian Amazons who bring her home. So before I even like really put pen to paper to write the first chapter, I figured out, you know, how that whole society would work in a very, you know, general way. So yeah, I do deep world building first, and then I really dive into the story.
And now when that transfers over into writing prose, do you find that it creates a foundation for you to explore on so you can find new things to world build? Or do you think it helps you focus more on your prose?
Once I get it to the point that I want it to be, it helps me focus on the prose because then I have all these like interesting little tidbits I can build off of like, you know, why these characters act the way they do, you know, what they eat, how they live, is I have all these things that I can bring up and work with. It makes having the story go forward a lot easier because I have all these resources to draw from.
It definitely makes a lot of sense. So when it comes down to the nitty gritty for world building, I know that we've talked in the past about you loving to research, and we briefly mentioned it here, how it's quarantine's hampering that. Do you think that having a wider base in our own world helps you come up with more interesting things for your world?
When you say wider base, do you mean like a wider base of knowledge?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yes. Incredibly. Because the world building process that I've built up over time as I've gone on, I've stopped really trying to focus on like one culture and learning a lot about that. But going down into like the deep, very base level of like why this culture was the way it was, what historical forces led to it being this way, and then looking for others that are in a similar situation. Like say, you know, the Roman Empire collapsing, you know, I look into the reasons behind that, and then I can go look at, you know, one of the Chinese dynasties collapsing and then seeing, okay, what was similar? What happened? You know, what is similar in this? And then I take those things and I can apply them to, I can take these like big, large forces, these big, large historical forces and apply them to something I'm building. So it retains that veneer of authenticity. And I also have a very broad roadmap to work from.
I definitely think that that's like one of my preferred ways of doing it as well. So it's definitely interesting to hear it laid out like that by someone else. I think a more direct approach like that is definitely a more thorough one that leads to, I guess, more interesting things, in my opinion, because you have so many different frames of reference. When you're trying to build this frame of reference, would you per se look at things you already know and try to build up from there? Or do you try to seek new pieces of history and culture out? Like, do you stick to what you know, or do you reach out? I guess is my basis of that question.
I generally try to build on what I already know. Like, say, for example, you know, I knew if I wanted to write something in like a World War II setting in my own world, well, I know a lot about World War II already, but I try to find out where the gaps in my knowledge are. Like, you know, I know there was an invasion at Normandy, you know, in 1944, but, you know, I don't know exactly like what kind of ships they made for it, like what the preparation was like. So then I'd find that kind of broad things I know, and then I'd dive deeper and try to find, again, the core things that were about that, you know, the ships, the training, the people, the leadership, you know, the soldiers on the ground, and then build a much more coherent idea of why this is happening in the world I'm building based on what I know from this other world, based on what I know from our world.
So to switch gears a bit, what do you think when you're building this world, when you're building worlds and looking things up, what do you think you struggle with the most? What do you think you do poorly?
One thing I have a lot of difficulty with is I have a really hard time hand-waving things. Is I want everything to, you know, make sense and everything to be, you know, 1, 2, 3, at least on a broad scale of history sort of thing. I mean, I can't get everything right, but I want like the cultural progression and the history to work. And for that reason, I'm terrible at urban fantasy. I've wanted to write urban fantasy for a long time, but I can't reconcile the history of the world with, oh, magic has been real the whole time, it's just hiding. Because I can't reconcile that. There's a friend of mine that put out a book recently, Dead Mage Walking. It's quite good. It's very in the line of like Harry Dresden or Harry Dresden. And he figured out a workaround that worked for him so he could get over that same hump I was dealing with.
That is actually definitely interesting. And I've always been a fan of the Dresden Chronicles. But like you, definitely could never reconcile putting magic in the modern day, and because it just wouldn't work. So it's cool to hear that someone else has really found a way to reconcile that and bring it together.
It's the main problem I have with doing urban fantasy. It's not, I hear a lot of people like asking themselves, like, you know, how does magic stay hidden? You know, if it's existed for all these years, how did it stay hidden? And the question that I have a trouble dealing with is, why haven't magic people been in charge for all of history if they've been here the whole time? Because if you can set someone on fire with your mind, that's a good reason for you to be in charge.
That's something I always enjoyed about Harry Potter, was the tidbit that whenever a new minister of magic came in, they would go and tell the prime minister, oh yeah, we secretly run the wizard world, and if you interfere, we'll remove you.
I did love that like one chapter with the other minister, and how J.K. Rowling, if you like add up the history of it, it turns out Margaret Thatcher tried to chuck the minister of magic out the window.
Oh, it's always something else about that setting. Love it. But speaking of Harry Potter and Harry Dresden, which I find are two things that a lot of people get into fantasy about, how did you start world building? How did you realize that this is what I want to do? I want to write books and forge worlds and try to make something of it.
I've always been a big fan of history. I've always liked history, and I always loved fiction. My world building just really started in high school as kind of like an expansion of those things. it's because I read fantasy, you know, I watched fantasy, you know, I loved Avatar like everyone ever in the history of the world. So I just started making my own things like, yeah, it's going to be like this, and, you know, oh, it's cool. And I do the thing where I bounce from idea to idea because my creative impulse comes directly from world building. All this prose and fiction is just basically a way for me to show off what I've made.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But when it came to taking writing seriously, it happened after I got my first, you know, real job and I moved into an apartment, and I was working at a credit union in the back office. You know, I wore a tie. It was banker's hours. I was making tie money. And I'm like, all right, here I am. I've arrived. I can, you know, write on the after work and on weekends. This is going to be great. And then I got fired in 3 months because I was awful at working at a bank. And I got fired just after Halloween, at the beginning of November, which, as you might know, is National Novel Writing Month. So that's really when I decided, like, okay, apparently I tried to join, you know, the proper workforce. This isn't going to work. I guess I should really take this seriously. So I forced myself to just focus on one thing and finish something. And in that process, I learned how to make myself write, how to make myself productive. So after that, that's what really got me started in earnest, taking it seriously, treating it as a goal rather than a dream.
So it was the actual like physical sitting down for and start writing and treating it seriously instead of just as something you want to do. That's pretty cool to have seen yourself take something that's your dream and physically make it a reality. I think that's why a lot of people want to be writers, but it's cool to see someone who really kind of did it themselves like that. That's something to be proud of, I think.
And at least it's a good story.
Yeah, it definitely makes for a good story. So tell me, what do you think is the most important thing when you do world building? What above all else do you look out for and make sure? I think I have an idea as to what the answer is because of the episodes you've been on, but for the sake of the question, what do you think?
Well, it'll probably come as no surprise, but I'm absolutely crazy about consistency, especially when it comes to what you have established as working. I mean, I grew up with, you know, shonen anime where, you know, suddenly, oh, you know, my superpower can suddenly do this now that I'm stressed out. And then, you know, that whole changes everything. But when you have like magical powers or, you know, high tech science fiction stuff, and then you apply it to the world and then, you know, nothing. And then everything's the same, except there are people with like laser eyes. Whereas I'm thinking like, well, wait, if there are people with laser eyes, that would change things. I've already like ragged on a certain series a lot. So I'll talk about another one. The Naruto series, which is a shonen anime that was really popular when I was in high school and beyond that. It's this, you know, ninja society where all the ninjas hide in, you know, hidden villages, and they work for, you know, these greater government figures called daimyo. But the ninja can, you know, summon giant frogs and, you know, blow up the moon and do all these crazy stuff. But, you know, no, we work for the daimyo because, you know, his dad was daimyo. That's why we work for him. That like drove me nuts. So I always try to make sure that when I throw something new into my world, like, you know, dragons or people have the ability to make animate stone golems, my first thought is, how would this affect society? What would this change? How would a human society adapt to having this ability? There's another friend of mine who's doing a project, an isekai that deals with that very well. He's an engineer. So he loves to, he's all about the numbers. So he built a very detailed magic system for his story called Delve, and like there's spreadsheets and everything, but he made sure everything's very consistent. And he also considered like, okay, how would people who can do magic, how would they treat people who can't, and how do people who can awaken? It's all very logical, and I like that. And I'm just nuts about stuff making, you know, logical sense as much as it can with people and magic.
I definitely think there's something cathartic when you can step back from a setting and like look over the whole thing and go, this really blends together well because of how consistent it is, especially when it has that logic to it, like you'd mentioned for your friend setting, where it's just, it all kind of has been pieced together to make sure the connections work and everything stands together as one thing instead of, oh, that thing's cool and that thing's cool and that thing's cool, but they don't really blend.
It's I'm also firmly of the opinion that boundaries can be a very good thing for creativity. Because once I like set something up in my world and I like know that, you know, X does Y does Z, I won't deviate from that. I won't have, well, it would be really cool if they could do A. So I'll just throw A in there. I won't do that. I'll think, well, okay, it can't do A, but you know, between X and Y, like there's this interesting thing and it creates its boundaries, but it also gives, it makes you think in a weird way. Boundaries can make you think outside the box. And that sounds completely insane, but if you're forced to deal with certain limitations or certain hard facts, you can come up with some really creative ways to use those or get around them while still holding to your rules.
I definitely agree. I think it's when you have those constraints, you can work so much more inside the box than outside of it. And it means so much more to use your own rules than to just wantonly break them. So I think that's a good piece.
And plus, when you're writing fiction, readers really don't like it when, you know, the super powerful artifact that you introduced, you know, in the last book or the last chapter doesn't appear again. And, you know, like they're trapped on, you know, oh no, we're trapped here on, you know, this burning house. We can't escape. And the reader's thinking, or your audience is thinking, wait, one of them can teleport, can't they? Why don't they just teleport out? And well, some people can look past that. Like I really do have a hard time looking past that.
I think I'd enjoy more media if I could.
Oh yeah.
But you're right. It's like in the last chapter, we had a stone that could create a geyser of water and now we're in a burning house, but someone still has the stone in their pocket. Nobody's bringing it up though.
Exactly. Use the stone. Just use the stone. I think that's like the fantasy nerd version of like screaming at the coach when you're watching football.
I definitely would agree so. So I guess one last thing is I know that you are a player and a DM for tabletop role-playing games. Do you find that you are able to use and utilize more of your world building at the table?
Yes and no. Yes, it's gotten me, I've gotten very good at world building for a tabletop campaign, but I've also realized as time goes on, world building for a tabletop game is very, very different than world building for a prose piece or just world building for fun, because it's a collaborative effort. If you throw in a whole bunch of like super detailed stuff that you spend a lot of time on and like, oh yes, there's this interesting, you know, cultural phenomenon that happens at dances and like, oh, you're expecting your players to do that. They're not going to care. They're just going to be like, oh, I danced with them. All right. That was fun. And you know, that's a whole lot of research and creative work, you know, gone down the drain for like for 10 minutes in one session. The key I found to doing good world building in a tabletop campaign is the stuff you do, make sure your players and their characters have some skin in the game, so to speak. They have a reason to be interested. So use their backstories to build your world. If someone say one player wants to, you know, join a mercenary company, that's a goal that they have, to be, you know, a great conqueror. And another player said like, oh, my father vanished, you know, years ago. Well, then grab those two, like your father vanished, to join that mercenary company. And then suddenly a good chunk of the party is very interested.
Yeah, tying their story threads together. That's some good advice. What do you think is useful at the table for world building?
The ability to improvise. Improvisation is the most valuable skill you can develop as a DM. Full stop. But when it comes up for world building, it's, you have to definitely be able to, you know, roll with the punches. Especially if you have a player who's into world building, they'll ask random stuff. Like if they come in and they ask, you know, they come into the tavern, like, what alcohol is popular in this area? And, you know, you say, gin, they like gin, a lot of gin. And then, you know, maybe on later on, you can look up like, how do you make gin? And then like, oh, wheat. So then, you know, like, okay, there's probably a lot of, you know, wheat fields here. How are they make gin? I don't actually know how they make gin. But that's the sort of thing you do research on. And then you'd know like, oh, if it needs this particular kind of berry, then okay, there are these berries over the place. And it's just kind of building step by step as you go, making it seem like you planned this the whole time.
get a base and learn to improvise, and they'll believe that you're prepared for everything.
Yeah, just let your players add things in, and then that way they'll just be so much more invested because it was their idea.
If they feel like they have a stake in it, they'll always want to be more active and more apparent in the setting. I think personally for me, I always like it when players want to leave a mark on the world, like whether by a character or something that they come up with for world building wise. How much interactivity do you think you have with your players when it comes to creating things together?
Actually, the last game I run, I built that into the mechanics, because I asked them beforehand, which is also a very important thing for a DM to do. If you're going to make big changes, talk to your party beforehand. But what I did was I decided, okay, so we're not going to do magic items. What we're going to do is, as part of the story, your adventuring party is going to be given control of an abandoned city or abandoned town. And you're going to spend the money on making improvements to it and, you know, like fixing up the docks, you know, bringing in settlers and that stuff. And that will function as a magic item. So I gave them this stake in this town, and each person like had their own, like, I'm going to build a gym. You know, I'm going to improve the roads. You know, I'm going to build, you know, a church to Sarenrae. And that really got them thinking and how they could do that, because I gave them a reason to, and that this will be directly linked to your bonuses. Think about this. So even the players that weren't super into, you know, world building and story, and they were more in it for the mechanics, they got into it too.
That's actually a very interesting way to get players motivated. I may just steal that myself.
Go for it. I mean, I can't copyright the idea. It's all yours, and you at home as well.
All right. Well, we're almost at the end of our time here. So I guess, is there any last wisdom you'd like to impart upon our listeners? Any last advice or comments you'd like to make?
I suppose two things. One, I'll circle back to what I was talking about when it comes to writing. The best advice on writing I can give is to take it seriously. Don't treat it like a dream. Treat it like a goal. Set goals for yourself. You know, by the end of this week, I'm going to, you know, write however many words. By the end of this week, I'm going to, you know, plot out my chapter. Experiment with your process, because everyone has their own process. Figure out what works for you, because what works for me doesn't work for everybody. That friend of mine who's doing that story, Delve, he just writes one chapter at a time, releases it, edits it, sends it out. I write, and he goes as he goes. I'll ask him, hey, what's going to happen with this? He says, I haven't decided yet. Whereas I know the entire thing planned out front to back before I even start writing. So figure out what works for you. For direct world building advice, do your research. Try not to lift directly from other cultures, but look deeper and find out reasons why they did what they did, why those things were feasible and are desirable when they did them, and apply those forces and ideas to your own world building.
Some pretty sound advice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you for joining us, and I really appreciate getting the time to sit down and talk with you. Well, that is all for us for tonight. Thank you for tuning in, and have a good night. Thank you.
You've been tuned into Worldcasting, an affiliate production of Worldbuilding Magazine. Have any feedback, comments, questions, or concerns? You can get in touch with us on our website, worldbuildingmagazine.com. There you can find links to our social media, or feel free to come chat with us on the Worldbuilding Magazine Discord server. Thanks for listening to Worldcasting, and until next week, keep worldbuilding.